I felt like velociraptors were like really smart.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they were crafty.
They are crafty.
And they had that little finger, that little intimidating hooky finger thingy. And, I mean, shoot, they could open doors.
That is true. Steven Spielberg actually did research on that.
Did he do research?
No, I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah, he broke the mold.
I can believe anything you say. It won't make a difference. That's awesome. Yep.
I'm glad to know that. Now I'm going to make up a lot more facts.
Oh, great. That'll be great. Okay, people. Welcome to episode number 20 of Podcast for Good. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I'm the program manager of the Combined Fund Drive, and this is, as always,
Heather Lucas. I'm the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined
That is correct. I did look up your title. That is accurate.
Oh, that's good.
Congratulations.
That's good. Yeah, I had another moment where I thought, what am I? I just show up on time and do work.
That's right.
Okay.
A clock in and a clock out.
What do you want from me?
Yeah. And in between.
I don't know what you want to call me.
In between those things, I do things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. One of the things that I'm sure you do as fiscal and policy coordinator is you read.
I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so one of the things we're going to talk about today is National Reading Month.
Hey.
So we've brought in two charities. We brought in two charities to talk to them about what they do. I have to say, this was probably the most eclectic duo we've had so far. We had a profoundly local organization in Team Read. The program manager, Bill Isley, was here to talk about them. They are based in Seattle and seem to be exclusively like working on helping kids read in Seattle.
Yeah.
And then we had Nancy Winters, the executive director of the Tanzania Teaching Foundation, which is exactly as it sounds,
based in Tanzania. Yeah.
And so we couldn't have had two more
like
different organizations that talked about reading. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what we do is we'll talk to them a little bit about what each of them do within their organizations and what their organizations do for the community. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we do every single time is we do a question of the podcast. I really like this question. I've already seen it written down.
Oh, you
so
like it.
Why don't you hit me with the question of the podcast?
Okay. So it is two-prong in a way. Philip Kerrigan, what was your favorite book as a child and your favorite book as a teenager?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this. Isn't this question one of people's favorite questions to answer? I always feel like whenever you ask this question, people like get this, especially about the kid thing.
Yeah.
They get this really like sort of like whimsical look on
their
face and they try to think back to the ones that they enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, it was when I was younger, it was probably like for a lot of people, it was Oh, the Places You Go by Dr. Seuss.
Mm-hmm.
I like Dr. Seuss in general.
Sure.
That was one set of books that I really liked, but Oh, the Places You Go was my favorite when I was a kid. I did read The Berenstain Bears.
Oh,
Yeah.
Did you see the whimsical look?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. I know. See, that's what I'm talking about. It's like people really dig their kids' books.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I grew up, I started to go more into, I was never really a Twilight guy. I wasn't. I didn't read those.
That's
I didn't read your precious Lord of the Rings.
Missing out. Actually, the book has moments where you're just like, really?
Yeah.
As an adult, I find out where I'm like,
really?
Okay.
Yeah. I think probably there was a book called I Am Legend.
Oh.
Became a movie later with Will Smith.
Yeah.
But I read the book and it was really, first of all, it was short.
Yeah.
So it was like, sweet, I can bang through this book really fast.
Nice.
And then the other thing that I really dug about it was that the writer wrote it like he was thinking the whole time, because the concept is he's by himself.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody else has sort of died off.
Yeah.
And so his all's dialogue is inner dialogue in his head. And I found that his thoughts, the rhythm of them, was the same way I think of things. Really fast and sort of like one sentence at a time. And sort of like, I love that. I thought that was cool. And then the ending was really great. So I think that was my favorite book. And then I've transitioned as an adult into like, if you give me a good nonfiction book that tells good stories with good characters, I'm in 100% all the way.
Yeah. I find that saying what your favorite book as an adult is a lot harder.
Yes.
Because, like, I've read so many books and been like, oh, this one has nostalgic purpose for me. This one is smart and clever.
Yep.
This one was thrilling.
Yeah.
You know, and then you read those books sometimes, or, like, you pick up a book because it sounds great, or it's, like, a bestseller or something.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is going to be a winner. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So then you're like, ah, okay, we're just.
Sure.
I never used to be a person who would just stop reading book.
Right. You'd stubbornly complete it?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I read a book start to finish.
Right.
And then one of my homies, Hillary Eaton, shout out.
Oh, listen to the podcast, Hillary.
Yeah, Hillary, I know you're in D.C., but seriously, listen to it.
Spread it to your D.C. friends.
That's right. Like a plague.
Yeah. Spread podcasts for good like a plague.
So she got me into Game of Thrones. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, she did. And when that happened, I discovered that I could no longer put up with books that just didn't capture me, or
sure,
I thought
sure.
the writing was terrible, or if the characters were boring, I couldn't do it any longer.
Are you one of those people who just never believe that the movie or show is going to live up to the book?
I am willing to give the movie or the show a chance, and like, it has, like, there are times when it's clear that, like, the movie and the show are definitely different entities than a book.
Yeah,
there
right,
always are.
Right.
And with a book, there's so much more detail, and there's so many more things that happen that you might have to cut characters out or interactions, so you don't get as much of, like, a backstory.
Yeah.
That sucks, but I understand.
Yeah.
So, like Game of Thrones, for example, like those are, there's going to be 7 books supposedly when the series is finished.
Mm-hmm.
And those books, I mean, like they're more than 500 pages.
Yeah.
You know, they're hefty.
So there's a bunch of like in-depth sort of stuff going on in the books.
Yeah. And that's not going to happen in the show because it's an hour long episode.
Right.
But yeah, I'm definitely willing to give everything a chance.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't satisfy me, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I find as an adult, so I've always loved history, but I find as an adult, if a writer, some of the best characters on earth are people who actually existed in real life. They're all complicated and they have their own stuff going on. And for writers to be able to dive into some of that stuff, like...
Doris Kearns Goodwin?
Yeah, amazing. Oh. Team of Rivals? Oh. Unbelievable. So there was there's this one book called Havana Nocturne, which is about the end of Cuba, the free Cuba, quote quote.
Okay.
And the beginning of the revolution.
Okay.
And how the mafia ran Cuba up until Fidel Castro came in and changed everything. And there are all these incredible, like, the writer he does these amazing things where he takes like Meyer Lansky or Lucky Luciano or these guys, Al Capone, and he writes these fabulous sort of like chapters of like intricate things about them.
Okay.
To where they go from being like a dude in a picture in history to like, this guy's a character.
Like he's fully fleshed out, emotional range.
If you made a movie, this guy would be your most in-depth character, right? Because of all these little peccadillos he has and all these little things that they do. That stuff is totally cool if you can nail it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there was a book recently there have been 2 books recently where I was just like, that's like a little gem.
Mm-hmm.
There was a book called The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially it's a history book, historian.
Yeah.
But it's also a vampire novel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And the way that she weaves the history and then
I love when people do
Dracula
that.
Right. And the vampire mythos, like just the two of those together, it was like, wow.
So cool.
I've never had a vampire book. Like, I've read a lot of vampire books, and I was just like, this is the first one that, like, it's in a category of its own.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love it when books do that. Yeah. Like, they surprise
you
that
cool.
way.
Very cool. This has been Reading Corner with Philip Kerrigan and Heather Lucas. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in.
So that was our best NPR impression, folks. We talked about books for a solid 10 minutes. Hopefully you're still paying attention to the show.
And now
we will move.
Local news. The weather on the 9s.
Boom, 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 ba-da-ding. So we're not going to waste any more of your people's time.
Yep.
We're going to dive into Bill Isley. He is the program manager of Team Read. He talks about literacy in Seattle and how they're helping. So here is Bill. very first guest today is the program manager of Team Reed, Bill Isley. Did I get your last name right?
Yep.
Nailed it. So, Bill, you're the program manager of Team Reed.
Yep.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me all the way down from Seattle.
I know. That's awesome. It's so cool that you made the trip. Can you give us a little history about Team Reed and what you guys do for the community?
Yes. So Team Reed just celebrated its 20th anniversary.
Awesome.
Nice.
And we have been in Seattle for 2 decades, and we're just starting to expand now. We're actually in Highline School District as well. And what we do is really, really simple. We hire, train, and place high school students to be one-on-one reading tutors with elementary students in the schools in Seattle and in Highline.
Wow, nice. That's awesome.
It's a great job. I love it. I've been there for 11 years. It's awesome.
Yeah. So do you work with a lot of school districts then?
So we work with, we're currently at 11 sites in Seattle and 2 sites in Highline. Mm-hmm. Most of our sites are elementary schools, but we're also in the community as well. We've got a partnership with Seattle Public Library where we do tutoring at 2 libraries in Seattle.
Oh, awesome.
And we have a partnership with East African Community Services where we do tutoring in their center in the Rainier Valley area of Seattle.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool.
So as someone who works with children and reading, how important is reading to a child's future success?
Reading is crucial, particularly for the students that we're working with in Team Read. We focus in on second and third graders. Mm-hmm. And these are second and third graders who have been referred to the program by their teachers because they're working hard on reading, but they're not yet at grade level. And so the teachers refer them to Team Read because they know they need extra help with basic skills like fluency and comprehension and strategy. So twice a week, they get this high schooler, this cool teenager who walks in the door and says, hey, I want to read with you. And they love it. And it's after school, and they're actually excited about it. I see little kids come running down the hall, running into the cafeteria to do Team Read.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool when you think about it because it's an after-school reading program.
Yeah.
But they get that one-on-one dynamic with the teenagers. And it's great for them. It's also super cool for the teenagers. A lot of them, this is their first paid job. And it's their first exposure to education as a career. And it's a real opportunity for them to show what they can do and give back to the community at the same time.
How do you pick the teenagers and how do you focus in on certain kids that need the help?
Well, the teenagers pick us. We go out and recruit every fall in the high schools, in the libraries to get the teenagers to the program. Mm-hmm. We have currently close to 300 teenagers who work for us in any given year.
Wow.
And they have to, it's a job. So they have to fill out an application. They have to.
Oh, that's cool. It's teaching them that sort of stuff, those skills.
Yep. Yeah, there's definitely two prongs. We always say it's the quintessential win-win. Uh-huh. It's giving the teenagers the workforce development skills that they need, and it's giving the kids the reading skills that they need.
Right.
And they're getting both together at the same time. But for the teenagers, it's very much a job. They have to fill out an application. They have to write an essay. They have to get 3 recommendations.
Wow.
They have to go through 5 hours of training before they start working with their students. Mm-hmm. They have literacy tools from the district that they are using with their student to help their student with their reading. So they really do put a lot of work into becoming coaches, becoming employees of Team Read. And they do get paid for it. So they get paid minimum wage now in Seattle, $15 an hour.
That's a pretty good job.
It is. I wasn't making that back when I was a teenager. Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. Yeah, they get the minimum wage, or they can get money towards college.
That's
which
cool.
Team Read matches by 50%, so it comes out to $22.50 an hour.
Nice. That is excellent.
Goes to their college, or they can get their service hours, and Seattle teenagers need 60 service hours to graduate from high school.
Yeah.
So they have their options, how they want to get paid.
Sure.
So are the majority of the kids that go through this program, are they from lower-income neighborhoods, or are you taking anybody and everybody who is maybe not reading at grade level?
So when we're looking for our partners, we specifically focus on Title I schools.
Yeah.
So these are students in in communities, in schools that are low income, that have the need. Also, the schools have the proven need for additional support from the community, and that's mm-hmm. where we come in. We've got this really cool relationship. We partner with Seattle Public Schools. I actually work in the school district headquarters, but we're a nonprofit. We raise all of our own money and bring our own money into money to the table. So. The school district provides us with a place to be. They provide us with support, and they provide us with some additional funding. And it's been working well for 20 years. It's
That's
really
awesome.
Cool.
Nice. That's awesome.
Do you think we're living in a time where kids have access to quality and engaging reading materials? Does this feel like – because a lot of times it feels like we're in this weird mode where the way people read is different than it used to be. There are still people who read books, obviously. Books still get published and all those sort of things. But with the internet and social media and all those sort of things, it feels like people don't, like, they're not interested in those sort of things. Do you feel like there's still those sort of materials out there for kids?
They're definitely out there. It's interesting. If you go down to your local bookstore, you'll see the kids section is slowly overtaking the entire store.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's happening a lot in Seattle. You walk in the door and you've got 20 aisles of kids books because there's always going to be I'm a parent myself. I want to have great books for my daughter. So I'm going to go out and invest in those books. Yeah. So that market is out there. It's always going to be there. I think what we're seeing is that kids do have a lot of options on how they spend their time. They've got a lot of opportunities to look at screens that doesn't necessarily involve reading.
Right.
And it's just kind of where we're at. But what I find from the kids in Team Read is that they really enjoy showing what they can do and showing off a little bit.
Cool.
Nice.
And so when they have this teenager sitting there and the teenager's like, show me what you can do, show me what you can read, they'll open a traditional book and show what their reading skills are because they want to impress their reading buddy. So We have fiction, nonfiction books, pretty straightforward. We also do have some tablets that give us access to a much bigger library, but it's really expensive, so we don't have that many of those. But the kids are willing to try to read just about anything, usually in the context of showing off and showing what they can do.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
I know these big words, no big deal.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you noticed any sort of favorite books that kids like?
We've got all the series and the kids just get addicted to the series and just keep reading. So Magic Treehouse has been around forever. That's still really, really popular. The Harry Potter series.
Of course.
That's like the golden, that's the crowning achievement. That's what a lot. And it's really cool because you'll see a little kid pick up the first Harry Potter and they won't be able to read 10 words on the first page.
Yeah.
But they want to read that book and they look at it and they're like, oh, it's big. It's important. I should be able to do this. And the teenager will sit there and they'll read with them and they'll read most of the page. And then the little kid will read a little bit more on the next page. And they literally like go through it page by page, just trying to get through it that way. But the kids like having challenges. They like having hurdles. So Harry Potter is still a big fave. Graphic novels.
Okay.
We got a lot of graphic novels in our library that we use. Some kids, that's their gateway. They want to read only graphic novels.
Yeah.
And so we meet them halfway. We're like, all right, we're gonna read them. We're going to give them to you. Also, we've got these other cool books that are out there. And a lot of the times for the teenagers, a big part of their job is selling other books. Like, hey, I used to read this when I was a kid, or I'm really interested in learning about space or sports. Why don't we try this other book? So much of what works is when the teenagers do a hard sell on the books and on reading. I was tutoring this little kid because we were short on tutors the other day, and the little kid wasn't having anything to do with me. He didn't want to look me in the face. He didn't want to read. And it just wasn't going anywhere. And the teenager who was supposed to work with him came in late. He was taking the bus and got there late. And as soon as he sat down, the kid clicked. And the kid wanted to read to him. The kid read this book about the Civil War that the coach pulled out of the bin.
Yeah.
And it's just the chemistry between them that works really well that I can't emulate.
Yeah.
I can't achieve that. And I think a lot of the adults who see what makes Team Read really cool see that it's the teenagers. They've got a chemistry that works.
That's great.
I mean, they're not too far off from being kids themselves. Mm-hmm. So to be like, hey, this is a book I liked.
Yeah.
You would probably like it too.
Yeah.
I'm sure that is just like mind blowing for a kid.
And the really cool thing about Team Read is that a lot of our teenager tutors were in the program as little kids. So they know exactly how these kids feel.
So they're coming back, too.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, they're coming back. They have the opportunity to give back. Some of them come back to their own school.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to have that happen. And they get it. They understand what the big challenges are. A lot of the kids we work with are ESL students.
Okay.
And really, all they need is access to somebody to read with them because they can't read in English at home.
Yeah.
So they, as soon as the teenagers are there, they just give them an audience to do that, and they improve so quickly once that happens.
Right. That's cool.
So do you have any recommendations or guidelines for how much a child should read?
It's interesting that you asked that because I've heard, you know, from the get-go, I've been with the school district or partnering with the school district for 10 years now, and you always hear 20 minutes a day.
20 minutes a day, yeah.
Always do 20 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. I had a conversation with one of my coworkers a while back, and she has been doing literacy for many, many years, and she said, you know, it's really, really hard to do 20 minutes a day. She said, I've got three kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I work full-time. Carving out 20 minutes a day for reading is really tough. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard that from her, I was like, really, are you serious? It's really that hard to find 20 minutes, but it is. Yeah. I mean, I'm a father too. I get home at 6 o'clock and my daughter loves books, but we have to make dinner. We have to get her in the bath. We have to get her to bed. And finding those 20 minutes are really, really hard. But having said that, I think 20 minutes of doing anything with books, you read to the kid reads to you, just look at the books, you flip through the pages, 20 minutes a day can really have a long-term impact. And I think even if kids are just hearing somebody else's voice, it's so, so important. So I think it's an important challenge, but I think it's something that the parents have to do. They have to figure out where that 20 minutes is in the day because it can. I've seen the impact that it's had on kids, and I think it's a worthwhile goal. It's not easy. People at the school district say it's hard. They admit it, but it's really a goal that's worth having.
Yeah,
nice.
I have kids myself, and one of the things I've noticed, so we do that 20 minutes or whatever at bedtime, right? So that's the last thing you do before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. And our son, our oldest, has just now wanted to start reading the book on his own, right? So he'll read it to everybody, right? And what I have noticed is that his little brother is now obsessed with reading the book directly after him. Like, he wants to read it out loud to everybody now, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to see how, like, since the oldest one has connected with reading, likes it, the middle one will now like reading because he wants to be like his older brother. So it's really cool to have that whole, like, the kid's not even, he's accidentally mentoring his little brother. You know what I mean? It's pretty cool.
Yeah. You always want to show what you can do.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's totally right. And then, of course, the middle one doesn't know. He just is repeating the words like, let's get a pumpkin, right?
And if there are pictures, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's clearly a pumpkin. There's something with pumpkins on this page. Yeah. But it's cool because he wants to engage. And he's never wanted to do that, ever, until his older brother decided that he liked it.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So let's say someone hears the podcast and they want to start giving to Team Read. What do those donations do for your guys' organization?
Well, like I said, we do raise a significant portion of our own money. We wouldn't be here for 20 years if it wasn't for how generous our community has been to Team Read. And we are supported by foundations. Some very generous foundations over the years have taken us on. But we get a lot of donations also from individuals who see the value in helping the teens become workers and exposing them to education and having the kids have that exposure to reading. So we get donations online all the time, and we get donations at our websites, www.teamread.org. Mm-hmm. And we also have events throughout the year. We're going to be participating in Give Big on May 9th
Seattle. Yeah, yeah.
It's become a real institution. It's not going to be around much longer, unfortunately.
Really?
Give Big is going away.
Oh, wow.
It's on their website now, so it's official. I'm not giving anything away.
Right.
But Seattle Foundation created Give Big because they really wanted to generate more interest in giving online.
Yeah.
And they feel they've achieved that goal, that it's a pretty common practice now. And so they're shifting their priorities. So Give Big's not going to be around, but it's been a big thing for us. And we're going to be a part of it this year also on May 9th as the final year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So this is the final year for Give Big.
In its current iteration.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. That's too bad. That really helped a lot of charities in Seattle.
It did. It helped us immensely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that means people, you need to start giving.
That's right.
To Team Reed through your paycheck with the CFT.
Yay.
I have one last question for you before we talk a little bit about some of the events you were mentioning, because I think that's important to talk about. With the older kids, with the teenagers, do you notice, because it sounds like this is their first prep to like applying for a job and actually having to put some skin in the game. Do you find that a lot of those kids who are mentors end up becoming like teachers or in the education field? I mean, have you guys been able to track any of that?
It's really funny because we do an evaluation every year and we ask the coaches a bunch of different questions about job satisfaction, training, all that kind of stuff. And they typically give us pretty strong feedback and they give us a lot of support for what we're doing. But when we ask them, has Team Reed made you consider being a teacher? We traditionally have gotten the lowest marks on that question.
No way.
And it's really, it falls about 50-50.
Yeah.
50% of the coaches say yes and 50% of them say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I'm a glass half full kind of guy. I'm like, all right, well, we're working with 300 teenagers. 150 of them don't want to be teachers after getting in the trenches and doing it.
Yeah.
But 150 of them do.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Team Reed over the years has been pushing harder and harder on this, and we're going to be doing this even more. Mm-hmm. We want to give a clear path to the teenagers to become teachers if they want to.
That's awesome.
And it's cool because you can do it for pretty cheap. The district is bending over backwards to get more teens of color into the teaching profession.
Right.
There's actually a big thing happening at Town Hall in Seattle tonight. It's a hearing on and the hashtag is Education So White.
Oh,
all
wow.
Over the place.
Yeah.
But they're really trying to pull out the details of why close to 90% of our teachers in public schools are white.
Wow.
And more than half of our students are students of color in public schools.
That's a really interesting stat.
And that's Washington State, or is that national?
I think they're touting it as Washington State. Okay. This is it's a hearing that's happening in Seattle, and they're trying to get everybody at the table in Seattle talking about it. But I think that statistic comes from a broader perspective.
Right. Sure. That's a huge deal. I mean, because the thing about it is, I think you would like kids who are minority children could learn better if they felt like the voice that was talking to them was similar to their own.
It's representation.
Yes.
It's not something you can quantify, but it's super powerful.
Yes, that's right.
We recently talked to a charity who said, she's African American, and she said that there were no principals or teachers.
That's right.
Who looked like her, so she was just like, I didn't think I could do that.
That's right. If you can't even see the success in the school you go to, right? Yeah. How does that prep you for the way you look at the real world?
Or like
world,
the jobs that you
life.
Think that you would want to have or go after? Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean it's everywhere. Black Panther.
Yeah.
Why is representation so important? Why does it matter that he's a black hero? Mm-hmm. But it is hugely important.
Yeah.
It's hugely important for kids to be able to see that and celebrate that. And
yep.
And it's true of teachers, too. You want your teacher to be somebody. You want to have somebody in the building that you can look at and say, yeah, I can do that, just like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can be that teacher. I can be that principal. No mm-hmm. problem. And one of the things we're most proud about in Team Reed is that we've got one of the most diverse workforces in the city.
Very cool.
Our tutors speak more than 20 different languages.
Nice.
Oh.
They come from the same neighborhoods. They come from the same schools as the kids who are in the program.
Yeah.
They look like the kids in our program.
Yeah.
And I think the kids appreciate that on a level they can't even articulate.
Yeah.
I'm sure they like open up easier and quicker.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's a cool thing to watch. I get to watch it every day, and you're right. They open up.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
They become more comfortable. So the school district is working really hard to make it easier than ever for teenagers who want to become teachers to do it. So there is a test, one pretty straightforward test that you can take. If you pass it, you can become a paraprofessional in Seattle Public Schools right after high school.
Oh, wow.
You can be paid $30,000 a year right out of high school.
Wow.
To be a teacher and get exposure to the profession.
Yeah.
And while you're on that paraprofessional, while you're doing your day job as a paraprofessional, you can get your certification as a teacher in the evening. And I was like, oh, how much does that cost? And they're like, actually, you can do it at some of the community schools in Seattle, and you can do it for under $20,000 over the span of your entire career becoming a certified teacher. So it's,
that is amazing.
It's a really, really cool thing that the district is, has been working really hard to make happen. So what we're trying to do in Team Reed now is get our kids funneled onto that path, get them to take the test, fill out the government application, become a paraprofessional, and become a teacher.
Yeah.
The other thing I can see with the 50-50 thing, because I'm also a glasses half full type of a fella, is
see how
that
he looked at me for that?
That's right.
As opposed,
cynical. is that it also does help? Like how much of a luxury is it for these kids who think they want to become teachers, but then go through this program and go, wow, that's maybe not necessarily something that I want to do. Like, there are very few times where as a teenager you can identify things you do or do not want to do when you get older. So that's actually even good too, because in a weird way it helps them go, okay, I liked it, I thought I would like it more, but I want to get into something else. That's pretty cool too.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, I identified that I didn't want to bissel a movie theater for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
But yeah, this is giving them exposure to a really cool career opportunity that might be for them.
Yeah.
And it might not be for them.
That's right.
But they're going to find out.
That's right. That's awesome. So do you have any, you mentioned some events. Do you have any events coming up?
So our next big fundraising event is Give Big, and that's May 9th in Seattle. And that's a special day where people can give to the charities of their choice. They can do it online. They can do it from the comfort of their own home. And a portion of the money that is raised on that day is going to be matched by Seattle Foundation. So everybody's dollars are growing.
Right.
It's a great day to build momentum around what we're trying to do as a nonprofit to raise money. So Seattle Foundation has been great about keeping that going for so many years, and we're excited about participating again. We just had our big luncheon, our big fundraising luncheon, which went extremely well. So we're excited about where we're at now, and we're always looking to the future, but Give Big is our next big event.
Cool. Nice. Cool. Excellent. That sounds good.
Yeah, I like it.
So, well, thank you, Bill Isley, Program Manager at Team Reed. Thanks for coming all the way from Seattle.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
I appreciate it. All right, so our next guest is the Executive Director of the Tanzania Teaching Foundation, Nancy Winters. Nancy, thanks for having us, or joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Awesome. So can you give us a little history about the Tanzania Teaching Foundation and what you guys do for the community?
Yes. Back in 2001, I spent a year teaching biology in Tanzania, East Africa, and I found that the biggest problem to the kids learning in secondary school was the fact that they were trying to learn in their third language, which was English. So all secondary school is taught in English, and the kids don't necessarily come with the skills that they need.
Right.
Sure.
For example, after teaching what we would call ninth grade for 6 weeks, I was still having trouble with open your exercise books and write down this information. And so I developed a course specifically for Tanzania to teach English as their third language so that kids could more successfully navigate their way through secondary school.
Yeah, okay.
And we've been doing the course since 2009.
In Tanzania,
yes. Yeah. We take two American volunteers, at least two, sometimes three, American volunteers over every year to teach a 10-week course that is incredibly intense, 7.5 hours a day.
Wow.
And 5 days a week. They get the weekends off. The students range in age between 12 and 16, because in Tanzania, you go to school when your parents have money to pay for you to go to school.
Oh, wow.
So it's a little bit different than here.
Yeah.
And only about 20 or 25% of the population, the eligible population, goes on to secondary school. You have to test in.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, how do you see, because that's an eclectic age range there. How do you deal with like their varying education levels and reading levels?
There's a huge cultural difference between the behavior of 12-year-olds and 16-year-olds in Tanzania than there is here. For example, the 12-year-olds are just like little sponges. They want to absorb every piece of information.
Right.
And the 16-year-olds are a little bit more standoffish, but they're still there because they know that their pathway out of poverty is essentially education.
Right.
So, and their parents really want them to succeed.
Is there a certain region in Tanzania that you guys are in?
Yes, we're in the South Central Highlands, and we only have one program. We take 40 students a year. The South Central Highlands is really nice. So people think Africa is very hot and humid. And in the area, or hot and dry, the area where we are in the season that we're there, which is September to December every year, it is kind of like summer here in Washington State. So it can get up into the 80s, sometimes 90s. But it's not too humid, and then usually the rain set in for the beginning of the rainy season, and it cools down.
Awesome.
And you're there all year, or is there a certain...
No.
Okay.
The students coming out of primary school have a vacation between September and January, so we're there from mid-September until mid-December every year.
Cool. So there's a lot of conversation in this day and age about... human rights. What are they? Are they healthcare? Are they these sort of things? Like, what is a basic human right? Do you view literacy and education as a human right? Do you think that's something that everybody should have access to?
Thank you for asking that. Yes, I haven't ever thought about it in those terms, but exactly, because education is the only pathway these days in this world out of poverty, whether you're in the United States or whether you are in Tanzania.
Yeah.
And the parents of the students there seem to know that, as well as the students themselves, even at 12 years old. They know that if they don't do well in school, they're going to be impoverished like their parents.
So parents who send these kids to these schools, they are in tough circumstances themselves.
Yes. In the community that we're in, it's very rural. Our village is only about 300 people.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of other villages surrounding that. But most of the adults are not necessarily educated past secondary school.
Wow.
And some of them even past primary school.
Yeah. Sure.
A lot of the people who have not been educated past primary school still speak the local language, which is Nyakusa, while the national language is Swahili.
Wow. Yeah.
So, and you'll probably want to ask why they teach in English when their national language is Swahili.
Yeah, question I had. Yeah.
I think the issue is that all the textbooks are in English and translating it into Swahili and keeping
it would be a process.
Yes, would be very expensive.
Yeah.
And
so, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's why they.
That does make sense. What I always find about those sort of about folks who. Are in poverty and they see their kids and they try to get them better opportunities is like there's a motivation there, a fierceness in their motivation that I think sometimes that we don't maybe practice here as much.
Yeah,
I think you're absolutely right. And one example of that is our class starts at 7:30 in the morning. The sun doesn't come up until 6 o'clock in the morning every single day of the year. And so some of the kids who are as far away as 6 miles and have to walk to our class basically start in the dark.
Man, that's unbelievable.
And it is. And they are driven. They are motivated.
Yeah. Have you seen lots of success? What are the benefits that you've seen students experiencing when they learn English as well?
They succeed very well in secondary school. Yeah. And we have a video of interviewing some of the teachers from one of the local secondary schools. And they talk about how the students can engage in discussion a lot more. The kids that graduated from our first year of what we call this course, Preform 1 English, those students have now gone on and are in college. And they are doing things like agriculture, education, medicine, and engineering. And it's just so gratifying to see how well they're doing.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do they come back to their community? Or do they end up sort of branching out to other things and going other places?
They come back to visit me. Many of them come back to visit me because I take the volunteers every year. I don't teach every year. But in our community, it's so small with only about 300 people in the community that they don't. But what they do is that whatever salary they will earn when they finish, they share that with their families.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Much more of a communal communal property.
Very cool.
So.
Very cool.
So as far as any kind of authors or books, I mean, you talked about books being in English, so I'm guessing there aren't a lot of authors who are like Swahili written down. But as in Tanzania, are there popular authors that your students are reading?
Let's back up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of these families are poor enough that, unlike in the United States where we give kids books mm-hmm. when they're very, very young, they can't afford to do that. So okay. most of these kids have never had a book of their own in their hands.
Yeah. Unbelievable. 12, 16 years old.
Yes.
Yeah.
They do sometimes have textbooks, uh-huh. but not there isn't one student per textbook. It's usually five kids that or more that's,
wow.
that share a textbook. And then they leave the books at the school. So what they do for text, for the most part, is take notes in, or actually write down every word that the teacher says
yeah.
or writes on the board, and that becomes their textbook.
Yeah.
What we do while we're teaching English is we have our own library,
mm-hmm.
and we have books that range in age range to kindergarten, probably through middle school.
Yeah.
Most of our kids start at about the second grade level and read second or third grade
yeah.
Books. Uh-huh. What we try to do is pair the book with a student, and they check out a book at once a week, and then they bring it back,
yeah.
and we have book etiquette lessons on,
yeah.
you know, don't eat and don't let
yeah.
your little brother or sister tear up the book,
yeah.
that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is a very popular part of the course.
So how does a kid get into your class? Is it a hefty application process? How does that work?
The application is one page.
Okay.
not a lot of bureaucracy there.
Excellent.
But they do have an entrance exam. The mm-hmm. first year when we taught in 2009, we barely had enough for 40 students. And now there are 85 applicants
Excellent.
For 40 places.
Yeah.
So we have an entrance exam. We take the top kids because we know that by educating them, they will help their other classmates
yeah.
and carry the level of the class
mm-hmm.
up higher.
Mm-hmm.
And it also prepares them for... they're better prepared for our class,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I talked a little bit about our class and how intense it is, the number of hours
right.
per day and so on. We do try to have use interactive teaching methods.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we teach with songs, we teach with pictures.
Yeah.
A lot of times at the beginning, we are teaching by acting out, jump,
yeah.
run,
yeah,
sit, lie
right.
down.
Yeah.
And then we do crossword puzzles and skits and so on to mix it up. This is
nice.
The first time
yeah.
any of those things other than lecture have been used in their classrooms.
Right, right.
So that's exciting. Our curriculum, we spend a huge amount of time on teaching them how to write sentences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We think in that 10-week period, the two volunteers correct, because we correct every single sentence from every single
mm-hmm.
student, 16,000 sentences.
Wow.
We think every student writes about
oh,
400 sentences.
Oh, man.
And they start with little three-word sentences,
mm-hmm.
you know, run, Jack, run kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah.
And they progress to, they can do up to 20-word sentences, and they can tell us every part of speech.
That's awesome.
So that they know the structure of English, and that gives them a way to continue learning,
yep.
learning the language. In addition to that, we teach what I call life skills.
Mm-hmm.
So we teach things like personal hygiene
mm-hmm.
and healthy eating. We have a first aid course because there is no 911 there.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we have an STD prevention so that they can grow
yeah.
up healthy and become adults.
Yeah. Yeah.
And lastly, we have a sustainable farming kind of portion
yeah.
because 85% of the country farms and even professionals
mm-hmm.
will continue going on in farming at least their own food.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Why Tanzania? What made you kind of land, you and your organization land in Tanzania?
Well, in 2001, mm-hmm. I was actually stationed there through the
okay.
The Lutheran Church of America,
sure.
Evangelical Lutheran
mm-hmm.
Church of America. And Tanzania is a very safe country. They have had no revolutions since they received their independence in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
There have been student uprisings when they raised student tuition.
Yeah.
But basically...
That's going to happen here soon.
yeah. yeah. Well, it used to be free for them.
Yeah.
unlike for
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
But they are a very wonderful country, peaceful and generous
yeah.
and kind. And they really treasure everything that we can bring them.
Awesome.
And they are so thankful for the course that we provide.
Excellent. Excellent.
Were you a teacher in Olympia prior to that, or Washington, or?
No, I'm not. I'm no longer a certified teacher. Okay. I came out of undergrad school and I taught school for 2 years, yeah. But then I went back, and this is quite unrelated. I'm an environmental engineer.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. I work with stormwater.
They are different. Yeah, yeah.
But I was brought up in a family where English was and being able to communicate was very important.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
And it is important for these kids. It's mm-hmm. their pathway to success. It's yeah. a tool.
Yeah.
I mean, they still have to study hard and do all of that sort of thing. But
yeah, and I can imagine being in Tanzania, you have so many different dialects, not just like local dialects, national dialects, but wherever you go, if you spread out into any other regions in Africa, English would probably be a more common language than some others.
Yeah.
Especially on the east side of Africa,
yeah.
English is predominant. On the west side, it's more French.
Okay.
Okay.
But yeah. And it depends on which country was colonized by.
Right. Yeah. That's people, right. So, yeah. That's right. Yeah. So let's say somebody hears the podcast and they want to start giving to the Tanzania Reading Foundation or Teaching Foundation. How do those donations help your organization?
They help our organization by, we are totally, let me start again.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry.
We are totally sponsored by people who donate, and it costs us about $250 per student mm-hmm. To run the program, and that includes all of the supplies we provide for the students.
Yeah.
It provides lunches for the students mm-hmm. and gets the teachers over there and supported.
$250 per student?
Yes.
That's pretty
yes.
good.
Yeah, I don't think you can get that so much for students here.
Oh, no. No, you can't. You can't.
Like, that might be like an after-school program. Just one small after-school program. That's it.
So essentially, if someone were to give to the Tanzania Teaching Foundation through CFD using their paycheck, really they could give basically $10 or $20 a month.
Right.
So basically $10 a paycheck.
And
that would basically provide
that would
for
cover
one student.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And one of the things we do teach in our course is that if you donate $250 enough to support a student, uh-huh. part of our curriculum is to learn how to write letters. So the students will write a thank you letter back to the
adorable.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
and then we take pictures of the kids and we pair the pictures with them.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is fun.
That is awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So do you have any events coming up?
Oh, we do. Oh, thank you for asking. We support the foundation by one fundraiser a year.
Okay.
It is a wine tasting fundraiser.
Everybody loves that.
I know. Yeah. And it's paired usually international wines.
Okay.
But sometimes we have one or two Washington wines. Uh-huh. We pair the wine with food. Mm-hmm. We also have Scott Kasu, who is a local jazz pianist, play at our events.
Yeah.
This year, it is on June 16th mm-hmm. at Albee's Garden over on the west side.
Okay.
And you can get more information on our website. And the name of our website is TanzaniaTeachingFoundation.org.
Nice.
Tickets are only $15. We've actually lowered the price
right
recently.
On.
And it's a really fun event, outdoor, and everybody who comes always says they really enjoy it.
I bet that would be great, especially in June.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
Awesome.
And we always hope that there's not going to be any rain. And so far, all these years, there haven't been.
Awesome. Very nice.
Knock on some wood there.
Yeah.
Nancy, we want to thank you for coming on the podcast and talking to Elizabeth about this pretty cool organization, and appreciate the work you guys are doing.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. Yeah. We also appreciate it. Asante sana. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, so right now is the point in the podcast where we hit you with some of the facts and trivia and different things that we like to do. And this time it's going to be related to literacy.
Yeah.
So, Ms. Lucas, why don't you hit us with some facts and figures about literacy?
Yeah, I can do that.
Awesome.
Look at these graphs.
Look at these graphs.
So there are these reports
mm-hmm.
that are the nation's report card.
Okay.
That's what they call them.
Okay.
So they do these things where they compare reading levels, math levels, mm-hmm. Other science levels, writing levels for fourth graders, eighth graders, 12th graders.
Yeah.
For Washington State, as you can see on this graph, which
I
will link to,
graph.
We are a dark, dark blue. Dark, dark
is
blue
that good?
Is good. Yes.
Okay, good. Woo.
Yes. Yay, sometimes, Washington.
Sometimes dark, dark blue cannot be good.
It's true.
But this is good. Congratulations,
this is good.
Washington.
Yeah, way to go. So I kind of find that often with Washington, like, we're good. We're really good at stuff.
We're up here in South Alaska. No one's paying attention to us.
South Alaska. Nice.
They think all it does is rain up here. Mm-hmm. And we're killing it on the nation.
So, yeah, our reading grade level 4 and reading grade level 8. They didn't have data for grade level 12 for Washington State for whatever reason. Yeah.
Maybe they've given up at that point.
Yeah, right.
Look, if you're a senior in high school and you can't read, it's over for you.
It's over, yeah. So we are, as far as the fourth grade level, we're 14th in the nation.
Nice.
We're a little lower when it comes to the eighth grade level. We're 21st.
Okay.
So we're still above the 50% mark. It does kind of go to say that we are definitely above the national average, though. For both, we're higher as fourth grade readers and a little closer to that national public average as eighth graders.
It's interesting, which is when you look at that graph too, the lighter blue, which I'm assuming since the dark blue is good,
lighter blue is bad.
It is all concentrated in the south portion of the United States.
Yeah.
What is happening in those sort of areas? That's what's so challenging about this topic.
Yeah.
Is like, clearly there has to be money being
Like maybe money is funneled to different programs, but not
it's
education.
It's so interesting to me that that the South struggles so much with reading levels.
Yeah, and I imagine that for California, Texas, they're both massive with large populations and cities that have large populations.
Yep.
So I imagine that just by having so many people there, that is going to affect your numbers in ways that it doesn't affect, say, Wyoming.
Well, I think, English is a second language, too.
Yeah, that is a big deal for both California and Texas.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, I imagine that's something. It's stunning how far behind you can get pretty fast.
Yeah, I actually found something today that said that if a child, like there's a sweet spot as far as the age goes.
Yeah.
So children, if they aren't up to the level they should be at age 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have a harder time getting them up to the reading level they should be at for every age afterward.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So like 6 or 7, that's really when they need to be that second grade, that third grade level. Right. And if they're not, they have a higher chance to fall behind.
Wow.
So there are benefits to reading, of course. For children who read, it clearly improves concentration, exercises your brain. It's one of those things that helps so that you don't get degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. It's something that prevents diseases like that. It teaches children about the world around them and gives them empathy.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course, vocabulary and language skills are improved. And for parents, I'm sure. If you haven't experienced this yet, you are going to experience it where like your kids are like, I want to read the giraffe book again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you have to read the same book over and over and over and over.
That's
and
correct.
Over and over.
Yeah.
But this is a good thing for kids. Even if you think like, oh, well, now you're just, exactly,
now you're just avoiding bedtime.
You're avoiding bedtime, but you also know exactly how the book goes.
Right.
And you're just repeating it to me. You're not actually reading it.
Right.
You're repeating it to me. But, vocabulary and word recognition. So they learn how to recognize words and then identify those words within the book, and they can identify those words in other books later. There's a pattern and a rhythm, so it makes them aware of the pattern and rhythm of text and get like their vocabulary, their interpersonal skills up, and they become more confident.
Yeah, I can see all that. I can see all that especially when my kids are learning how to read, definitely. Because you're conquering little victories when you learn how to read.
And then as far as like things that kids have said, I found this little thing. Save the children, voices from the field.
Okay.
So they ask kids, why do you read? Why do you love it?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of kids who were like, you know, I love to read because it's fun, or I learn how to read, or I do better in school because I read. Okay, that's adorable. Good job.
It's adorable.
Job. But there are some words like, I love reading because you can learn many things in a book. You can even learn how to build a hamster home.
Okay, a hamster home.
There was a girl in Shaw, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. She said she likes to read because her mama likes to read.
Oh, that's nice.
Right? Another kid says, reading lets me travel to awesome places in my imagination.
Cool.
Another one says, it's kind of sad, but I love to read books because it's the only fun thing I can do.
Good Lord, kid.
And then a 3-year-old said,
somebody get that kid like a bouncy ball or
exactly,
something.
Exactly, yeah. Another kid, a 3-year-old said, I read because Nana says I got to. It is fun, and I learned my ABCs from books.
That's awesome.
But I do have some kind of like trivial.
Ooh.
Trivia for you.
Ooh. Okay. This is our first trivia go around.
Oh yeah. All right. Yeah.
Hit me with it.
All right. So, the word nerd. Do you know who coined the word nerd?
Oh my
gosh. It's an author. We've already talked about this author.
We've talked about this author?
Yeah, right now. We've talked about this author today.
Tolkien?
No.
Dr. Seuss?
It is Dr.
He
Seuss.
He termed the word nerd?
He coined the word nerd.
Get out of here.
In his 1950 book, If I Ran the Zoo.
And wow, I'm going to have to read If I Ran the Zoo now.
Yeah.
It has the term nerd in there?
Yeah.
And it was the first time it was ever used.
Apparently, in print.
Oh,
first
my
time.
Gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That's a heck of a trivia.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Okay. I have a couple more.
Yeah.
Did you know that reading about yawning makes you yawn?
No way.
That's what it says.
Really?
So next time, I kind of want to yawn now because we're talking about it.
But I know. I'm thinking about it right now.
Yeah, don't think about it. Don't do it.
Don't yawn. I don't know.
If you yawn like that, I think you need to go see a doctor. There's something else going on.
Yeah, that's probably true. Bad.
Okay, so as far
why
as
that my impression of yawn.
Work on it.
Yeah.
I'm you need to go to improv.
Yeah. Wow.
Improv downtown.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so women buy 68% of books that are sold. Flat out.
Wow.
Yeah. Women buy more books.
Women buy more books.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are smarter than us, so that makes sense.
You're welcome. Bookstore should be thanking us just randomly. Thank you.
Right.
What did
That's
I do?
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And then adults who read literature on a regular basis are more than 2.5 times likely to do volunteer or charity work.
Wow. Look
and
at that.
Over 1.5 times as likely to participate in sporting activities.
That's fantastic.
So it may be something where reading makes you feel connected to like a character, a region.
That's
a
really cool.
Time, and feel connected and you go out and volunteer and do charity work.
Wow. Those are very cool.
Yeah. And then this one is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The largest advance ever paid for a self-published book. Okay, so self-published books are becoming a big thing simply because internet, right?
Right. You can, it's basically you can do anything.
$4.125 million.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Wow. Who did the advance? What?
Simon & Schuster paid that for Richard Paul Evans's The Christmas Box.
Okay.
I don't know if The Christmas Box is a children's book.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like it could be.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Okay. And then.
Wow.
Of all the pages, what page number do you think that readers lose interest at?
Ooh, wow. That's a great question.
Like, think about books that you've read and you're like, I'm done.
I mean, I feel like between 75 and 100 is where I would give it like the first 20, 30 pages for sure.
Yeah.
And then I'd start to feel like, wow, there has been a few books where I've read and like they've been history books or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wow, this reads like stereo instructions. Yeah. This is like brutal.
Yeah.
And then you give it like a chapter or
you
two.
You give it a chapter, you give it a chance.
And then you're like, oh my gosh, this is not getting better. This is getting worse.
So,
I feel like 75 to 100.
Okay. So the stats that I found say that interest starts to wane, page 18.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like two, right?
Short attention span.
Like, get it to me.
Yeah.
Give me what you're trying to. But, you know, it's so funny that you say that because it makes sense. I mean, when I took this class in college that was like a screenwriter's course, one of the things they always talked about as screenwriters is – one of the mechanisms you can have to make your script interesting is to have a major like event happen right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Right. Almost like one of those where you feel like it's like you're in the middle of it. You got dropped in the middle of the story and then all of a sudden you can do flashbacks or whatever.
Yeah.
Because the whole notion was your first 5 minutes, your first 10 minutes are going to define whether people
like they keep watching.
Keep watching or stay interested in your movie.
Yeah.
It's the same with books, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they tell a narrative thing and you're supposed to keep people hooked.
And I imagine that 18 pages, that could be.
That could be like two chapters.
That
right?
could be, depending on the book. Yeah. Two chapters, three chapters at that point. So it makes sense that people give it a fair go.
Yeah.
And then if they're like, you know what, I can't.
Yeah. I felt like there was a couple where I've gotten to maybe 20, 25, and I've been like, oh my gosh.
I've done it more with nonfiction than fiction. Like, fiction has grabbed me for the most part. There have been a couple of books where I was just like, this is ridiculous. But fiction is a little harder sometimes because it can kind of sound like stereo instructions.
That's right. Yeah. So that was our, those were our two conversations with Bill Eisley and Nancy Winters. Both really interesting folks, both doing pretty cool work. And, you know, sort of generational effects to it, which is very cool. So to talk a little bit about upcoming events, the slate is actually fairly clear at this point. We finished up the Snow King recognition event on March 15th. It was a fabulous event. Multiple people came. It was really nice.
Yeah.
The main thing we have going on in the next couple months is the leadership breakfast. So we're going to be hyping this up big time. We're going to hope because it'll be hard to get everybody in the room at the same time with this particular podcast. We're going to hope to be able to give you kind of a preview of the leadership breakfast before we actually have it. But it is going to be on May 17th from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. at the Great Wolf Lodge, which is just 15 minutes down the highway from the state capitol, located in the Chehalis Centralia area. And we will also have campaign leader trainings for those who are now getting recruited and appointed to be the lead volunteers in their particular agencies. We'll have those trainings in early and mid-June, so we'll get you guys all the stuff you need to do the fabulous work that you do basically every single campaign.
It's crazy. Campaign is happening.
It's unbelievable.
So soon.
It's like ridiculous.
Time flies.
It's so crazy that we're already prepping for the upcoming year.
Yep.
we appreciate you guys listening to the show. Hopefully you found this one really interesting, and make sure if you listen to us through iTunes to rate us, to leave a comment and rate us, because the higher you rate us, the higher we actually end up in the podcast feed, so people can actually get a hold of what we're doing here. And of course, a shout out to Landon Baldwin. Thanks for listening again, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.